CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com. It's a Wednesday morning. We are live. We've got Damon here. We've got Sia here. What's going on, Damon? Have you got your bucket of tea ready this morning?
There we go.
Yes, and just in time. Just in time.
The biggest now, buckets Gareth, of tea. Yes. What's up?
Gareth, so now you need to give a blow-by-blow detail about this commercial with Gerard Butler.
All right, so let me explain this to you. So I read a story on Business Insider about South Africa's Advertising Regulatory Board. That's what they called the ARB. Okay, the ARB have banned an ad for Windhoek beer on the basis that it entrenches toxic masculinity by suggesting that real men drink real beer.
Okay, first of all, do you agree that the advert does suggest that real men drink real beer? Because that is the essence of the message of the advert, and I tend to agree that is the message of the advert.
Okay, so here's the audio of the ad. You don't need to see it, but I'll explain.
And can I add one more thing?
Yes.
The advert also insinuates that if you've got a small penis, you're not a man. And if you're not a man,
right.
That is the essence of the advert.
Okay.
So I actually agree with ARB.
Okay, well, anyway, I knew you would because you're a typical beta male, so I wouldn't expect anything less from you.
No, I've got a small penis.
Well,
so
no.
I can understand
no, but you're, okay. Here's the ad. Listen to this. So there's this guy on a Zoom call, all right?
Hey, where are you?
Just grabbing a beer, man.
Better be a real one. Remember when you asked for this?
So he's making a hand gesture like you're holding a lime, okay? And the guy goes, let's say he does the same hand gesture, but it could be like you're saying he's got a small penis, all right?
Exactly.
Can I have a lime with this?
Hey, that's a Windhoek. That's 100% pure beer.
That's Gerard Butler sitting at the counter looking like a real man. And these other guys look like little losers. So Gerard Butler says, You don't need this is Sparta. You don't need a lime. So that's basically the idea.
You don't need any blank.
And then the guy drinks the beer and he's like,
keep it real, Joe. Keep it real with 100% pure beer.
Not for persons under the age of 18.
All right. So the idea here is that Windhoek is a real beer. It's 100% pure. That whole Rheinites Gebot thing. So, you know, you're not drinking watered down rubbish. It's a real beer. You don't need to add anything to it. And of course, one person, and now Damon, the only other person, and I expected you fully to say this, that could possibly find offense with this, has decided that this is somehow a representation of toxic masculinity and that it needs to be banned because it's making people with either small penises or with complexes feel bad about themselves. You want to try and defend it a little bit harder? It's a hell of a stretch. It's not only a stretch, it is ludicrous that one person and one complaint
let's go back to the message of the advert.
Yeah.
Is the advert saying that you have to be a real man to drink Windhoek beer? And is the advert saying that if you've got a small penis, you're not a real man? Is the advert not saying that?
No, I think it's inferring that, Damon. It's certainly not.
Well, there you go. Inferring, saying. What's the difference?
And Damon,
that's what commercials do. Commercials infer.
Correct. And you have to have something of a sense of humor to understand that this thing is not going around and making a mockery of men who have small penises or for.
Oh, it is.
Oh, I don't think so. I think that they're having fun with the idea of real men and real beer. And only a weak, pathetic human being would be offended by that. I don't think I don't think if you are a real man, you're going to be worried about this. And frankly, I don't think the kind of men who would be offended by this will be drinking Windhoek, in my opinion, anyway.
I just agree that the advert does reinforce the concept of toxic masculinity.
Well,
it does.
How so, Damon?
That's all I'm saying. Well, I think I've explained it already.
I don't think you have. I'm still not understanding.
Okay, where does toxic masculinity start?
Damon, hang on a second.
It starts with, I'm a man. And if you're not a man, then you're unacceptable.
No. Hold
on. That's where it starts.
I think this whole idea of toxic masculinity is, and we discussed it briefly the last time you were on, as far as I can remember. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the deal is this. Toxic masculinity has become a catchphrase for all kinds of things. On one end of the spectrum, for very serious, very violent masculine behavior. and gender-based violence.
But it,
right?
Hold on. It starts somewhere.
And on the other end, any guy who's flirting with a girl who doesn't want to be flirted with calls it toxic masculinity. Now,
that's where it starts.
Oh, okay. So they're the same.
Well, it's to a lesser degree. It's the same thing. It's the start.
All right. Well, you've just run the risk of taking something completely trivial, like a guy flirting with a girl, and making it serious.
You added that she did not want to be flirted with, and then he persisted on flirting with her.
No, I didn't say
that.
I didn't say that. I said flirted with a girl who might not have wanted it. And sure, mm-hmm. But then she can say to him, "No, thank you," and then they move on. That's not toxic masculinity. That's
okay,
a guy.
That's
taking his chances. And let me tell you something.
I agree with you.
You're saying
that's not toxic masculinity.
You're saying there's not a spectrum. There's not a spectrum for this thing.
Yes, I'm saying there is a spectrum.
Okay, so the spectrum is from what is the least serious version of toxic masculinity, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, the beer advert.
Okay, so
the beer advert reinforces toxic masculinity, but it's very subtle. And the example that you gave, where a man is flirting with a woman and she doesn't want to be flirted with, and then he persists.
Okay, so you
for maybe,
but you're,
and
you're,
then he persists. Maybe he persists for another 30 seconds,
but
and then eventually he leaves.
You're applying the same terminology to a huge range of behaviors.
It's got to start somewhere.
I think you are looking for stuff where there isn't stuff, if you don't mind my saying. Because we all know what...
Arb will say different.
Who?
Well,
Arb.
Advertising.
Can we just also remember that this is a 30-second advert? This is not rule of law. This is not what has been decided in a court that this is how every woman will be treated, or if you don't do this, you are a man. This is a tongue-in-cheek, wants to make a quick joke,
You would think that, but the fact is that one person, someone who thinks like Damon does, has gone and complained to the Advertising Regulatory Board, and they've actually banned this ad on that basis. Now, that person has decided for all the rest of us that we're too stupid and immature to appreciate an ad for being an ad. That's what I find offensive. And if you are going to talk about this toxic masculinity thing, which I'm frankly sick of hearing about, because we do live in a country with real problems, where there are actual women who go home in fear of their lives and go to work in fear of their lives every day. And you're going to equate, because this is what people do when they say it starts somewhere, like Damon's just said, is you're equating... You're equating an absolutely harmless joke, comment, flirtation, or point of view with the very far end of the most dangerous kind of behavior by men. And you're saying that you can apply the same terminology to both ends of that spectrum. Now, I aver that when you do that, you have the effect of trivializing serious criminal activity on behalf of dangerous men. By making it sound like it's just a flirtation, because you're using the same term. In other words, your term is stretched so far that it's no longer useful. It's not specific enough. If you're going to say toxic masculinity is this broad range of behaviors, everything from me going, "Hey, my name's Gareth, do you want to have a drink?" right through to rape. And you're going to say that they're the same
thing.
Advertising Regulatory Board are making a mockery of some very serious problems.
Okay, Gareth, what I'm saying is not that epoch-shattering. It's not that pioneering or strange or weird. It's the same as take a concept like racism. So racism can start as very subtle, white person sees a black person
I will use your example.
Go to the extreme where a black person is murdered.
I will use your example against you, because they're not the same thing. And don't you dare say that. There are some occasions where people have lost their lives, and you're equating that
to
someone.
That's what I just pointed out.
And you're equating that to someone being slightly insulted.
There's a spectrum.
You're using the same term for things that are completely different things. I mean, don't you realize that that's it's at very least an inarticulate use of language. And I'm not going to let people who don't know how terminology works and who can't use their language articulately, I'm not going to let those people determine for the rest of us what is considered humor and what is considered offense and what is considered danger, because they're not the same thing. And I'm sick to death of people, ordinary people in society, deciding that because something's upsetting to them or offensive to them, that everyone else has to follow their rules. And that everyone else has to be a part of their world.
That's what I kind of want to look at then. Is Damon, are you happy with what has now transpired? And do you think this is the way the world should work and will work? One person didn't like it, has taken it up, and it is now banned. Is this just the way the world will work?
Yes, I'd like that, yes. I think it's a good start. I think that toxic masculinity is a serious problem, especially in South Africa. And this advert is a subtle version of toxic masculinity.
All right, well,
it starts somewhere.
Well, you're welcome to that world. You can switch off your television, just like people could switch off their radio when you were on it and they didn't like you. But you don't have the right to tell me what I'm not allowed to find funny or offensive. And furthermore, I think that it's completely unacceptable.
Where do you draw the line?
You don't draw the line. Not Damon Calvari and not the Advertising Regulatory Board. Everybody can draw that line for themselves. And you know what, Damon? The big sacrificial lamb that you're missing in all of this is a sense of humor. This ad is only saying that it's real beer. If you read it properly as a sensible human being. I mean, were you offended by that ad?
Offended is a strong word. I wouldn't say I was offended. But okay. I thought to myself, the message, I don't like this message.
So why are you willing to die?
Saying that only real men can drink this beer.
Well, then why are you willing to die on this hill?
It's not great.
I mean,
it's not that great.
Why are you willing to tie your colors to this mast in particular and to take this argument on as your own? I don't think this is something worth getting upset about. I think this is ridiculous. And the fact that we're even talking about it and comparing it to serious things like toxic masculinity makes it sound like you don't take rape seriously, if you don't mind my saying.
What you just said there is ludicrous.
No, well, so I think you're as ludicrous for equating.
I don't take rape seriously? That's ridiculous.
I do. I think that you're putting it in the same category as flirtation that doesn't go right.
Well, that's where it starts. Where do you think rape,
so
in certain cases, where does rape start?
Just because...
How does rape happen?
It can start with a flirtation.
It can start with an unwanted flirtation. The man can get aggressive and he can be a rapist.
Damon, here's Annette. She says, why do you get offended when you feel the word genocide is incorrectly applied? Because genocide is a very specific term. We know what it means. So when that guy from COSAS in the news item earlier said that it was genocide, you got upset because he's incorrectly applying a term. And I say the same is true here. In the case of toxic masculinity, you can't have this broad definition. You've got to call it something else if it's going to be, on the one hand, something which is deadly dangerous and is a real life trauma for many people. And on the other hand, is something that slightly upsets you. They can't be the same thing. Otherwise, the words mean nothing, Damon.
Words mean nothing. No, I think I've explained it pretty clearly.
I really don't believe you have. Tracy says, I'm offended is the tagline of the 2020s. It's a trend that can just F off. Sean says, I just don't know
how we're going to move on.
Sean says, Damon is the perfect meme for people that have woked the society with silly general phrases and a micro penis. Tracy says, apply the same argument to every Revlon or L'Oreal ad. They sell toxic femininity. The ad industry has always had double standards. Steph says, it's pretty normal for guys to compare penis size. Rebellious Ruth says, I don't get the ad, honestly, but women have bra sizes, and I think if men wore bras for their balls, we wouldn't have war. They'd be, oh, I'm 3 stone, 12 bar length. I don't know what Ruth's on about. Andre says ads should not be taken too seriously unless they are acutely offensive. And Beth says, the toxic masculinity argument has made men not take chances, which has turned them into beta males, and those are not the kind of people who Vince Hook is trying to appeal to anyway. And the person who complained is probably a vegan, says Brandon.
Now, let's not go down that road, Brandon. Okay.
Duncan says Damon already admitted earlier that he drinks flying fish. That's a very feminine drink.
Well, you know, I don't like beer. And then I discovered that these lemon beers, I prefer Radlers, but Radlers, I couldn't get Radlers.
Damon.
They had a supply problem.
So Damon.
So Bernice bought flying fish and I'm not even drinking it now.
So
I don't like it.
Damon, in other words, you're not even the target market for this ad anyway.
But then I'm sorry if I'm taking this conversation back. If they are describing something and you know it is not you, why do you care?
Well, because some people, and this is something very interesting about humankind, and I'm glad you brought it up, Sia. Some people get offended on other people's behalf, usually because they either have a superiority complex or they are the kind of personality who feels that they constantly have to judge other people, or they're some kind of social crusader. They're someone who feels that they have been tasked with some really audacious job in life, that it is their duty to protect you and me and everyone else from, you know, a mean ad, a nasty, vicious, offensive ad, in their opinion. Those are exactly the kind of people who need to realize that in law, they apply the term that you can't be offended on behalf of someone else. And that's true no matter where. If you're not personally offended, you can't get offended for someone else. You know that, right? Damon, you're looking confused.
That raised eyebrow, Damon.
No, there was a famous poem by some priest around World War II time, I think, and he said when they came for the Christians, no, when they came for the Jews, it was none of my business. When they came for the Romans, it was none of my business. And then when they came for me, there was no one left to help me. So this concept that you mustn't care about other people's problems is ridiculous. That's psychotic.
I'm sorry that there's a huge difference between offense and between language and actual violence. What you're talking about is actual violence. I think everybody knows how bad that is and everyone's against it.
But Gareth, you're the history buff.
Yes.
You know history.
Right.
Where did all the genocide and the this and the that, did it all start?
I can't believe that.
It started
but
by.
Just, hold on,
it
Damon. Started don't by you, the, don't
it
you
started
feel,
by the spoken word, Gareth.
Don't you
it
feel.
It started with the spoken word. Misinformation,
Damon,
propaganda,
Damon,
fake, that's where it all starts.
Damon, give me a chance.
So it is important. It starts somewhere.
It starts somewhere. So because it starts, I mean, it could start with an idea in someone's head. How are you going to police that?
Well, obviously you can't, but
okay.
when it verbalizes, you've got to be, okay, you've got to be cognizant.
So if someone,
of it.
So words are also violence.
That's where it starts, Gareth.
All right.
What is your response to what I said in terms of our history?
Sorry, I can't take you seriously because
come on, Gareth, you know your history.
I absolutely can't take you seriously, Damon. The moment that someone
equates, what I'm saying makes
the moment
perfect
someone
sense,
equates,
Gareth.
No, it doesn't make perfect. It makes perfect sense if you're a fucking psychopath. It does not make sense. I'm
really?
Terribly sorry. It doesn't. And the fact that you even think that it's okay to equate the death of millions of people in a genocide with the words from someone's mouth that might be offensive just
it's
proves that you can't be taken seriously.
Gareth, it's the same principle. It's exactly the same principle. That's all I'm saying. I was giving an extreme example of illustrating
but,
the
Damon,
concept that
Damon,
things happen with the spoken word.
The reason we have law, and law is all that matters here, is because law is very specific, and the definitions of things matter. That's why if you're going to call something toxic masculinity, we need to know precisely what toxic masculinity is, because there should be consequences for it if it's bad, right?
Okay. Uh-huh. I'll give you a very, very small example, like a trivial example, but it's an example of toxic masculinity.
I'm getting bored with
it. I've been in situations many years ago where I was at a party or a social gathering, and I was the only one who wasn't drinking beer. And I was like looked at as if I'm an alien.
I hate to break it to you, but you are a bit weirder than most people. Do you really think that you're the average guy? Why do you think you're on that? Why do you think you're on this show, for heaven's sake?
So, what?
Why do you think you're on this show? Because you're pretty weird. You're different to everyone else.
So well, just Just a quick thing to that, Damon. If you use that scenario, so your conclusion or your resolution is controlling everyone else around mm-hmm. you in order to make him feel better.
No, you have to be realistic. You can't control everything.
No, no, no. He's saying if he doesn't find it funny, it's not funny. Well, so he's going to make a rule for everyone else.
Because that's what the banning is. I really don't care about what instance it is.
Going back to my original question, and I'm going to say this, I'm going to ask this for the third time. Is this advert not saying only real men drink this particular beer? Is the advert not saying that?
No, I think the ad is saying you don't.
Even if it's a joke.
I think the ad, because the unique selling point, let's call it, of Windhoek is probably you don't need to add anything to it. It's the purest kind of beer, right? That's what they're trying to get across.
No, I didn't get that out of it.
Well, of course you wouldn't, because
everything's about you. Now, this is a classic sign where you say this guy's got a small penis, where you go like this with your fingers, with your index finger and your thumb to show that man had a small penis. Everybody knows that. Everyone knows that. That is the insinuation. That is the subtle implication.
I've had enough. I'm just bored. And I think a lot of other people are too. Bernard says, move on. You know, I mean, yesterday we introduced a new word to the show, which I'm going to start using more often. Wah. So if you're upset by an ad, wah. Imagine waking up in the morning. Imagine watching an ad on TV, waking up the next day and writing a letter of complaint to the advertising regulatory board. Imagine what kind of a life you have. Looking for offense where there isn't any. We live in a country where there are people with real problems. First of all, there are actual dangerous men running around, exacting violence, proper violence, measurable violence on women. Some of those women are dead to prove the point. Then we have a liquor industry, which is on its knees at the moment, where people are losing their jobs left, right, and center. And someone wakes up in the morning and goes, the way I'm going to make the world better is to complain about an ad. This is no Mother Teresa. This is someone who's looking for attention. And I'm afraid, Damon, for all of your argument in the last half hour, I have not found a single point of view that is persuasive with respect to explaining to me, first of all, what toxic masculinity is, because it's such a broad range of things that it could be anything. It could be anything.
Exactly. That's what I've been saying.
And if it's anything, then it's useless, because a term that means anything is not a useful term. And if you're going to use that term to decide whether to ban an ad or to ban a word or to ban a person or to cancel something, and that thing is not specific, it is not useful to this discussion or to any other discussion in any other place. And for people to get upset about this ad is just ludicrous. It's childish. Anyway.
Well, I think I explained myself. We're just going around in circles now.
I don't think you explained anything. All right. Well, luckily, we've got Sean Sanders joining us in a minute, so we'll talk about something.
Can I ask you a question? Because this takes us to another thing. What do you think? I don't know if you discussed this before. What do you think of this new feature on Twitter? It's called Birdwatch.
What's that?
So Twitter have introduced this thing. If you see someone's tweet that you don't agree with, that you think is misinformation or disinformation, you can correct the tweet. So there's a thing you can click on called Birdwatch where you can say, you can like add your thing.
Oh, this is going to keep people like you
But it's not distributing. It's not available to everyone. I mean, I looked through it and I can't see it on my Twitter. They launched it yesterday or the day before.
This is going to keep people like you and people who complain about ads really busy for the next couple of years.
Well, I agree with you, because what happens is, like, if you go on Twitter and you see something that you totally that you think is misinformation, if you go to the options to report this tweet, there isn't an option for misinformation or fake news. They give you all the other options. Is this a hurtful tweet? Is this an offensive tweet? Is this tweet harassing? But there's no option, is this tweet false or misleading? So I don't know why they don't just do that. But anyway.
I just wish that Jack Dorsey would just completely shut Twitter down. That would help humanity to move forward. We're so stuck. And frankly, I don't know that anything Twitter's done has been constructive in the last couple of years. Maybe once.
Well, And my bigger issue is with when it comes to this time that we're in, let's call it, it's a bit of cancel culture. It's just a bit of going out for blood. There never seems to be an end. There never seems to, yeah, there's no finite stop of, okay, this is enough. We've solved the problem. So I will not be surprised now if people are still going after Vintook and actually saying, you know what, you need to fire the whole team just after the ad is back.
Yeah, I imagine.
You know, because when is enough enough? I see a couple of people are referencing MacG, and MacG has been on radio for years now, and now he has his own podcast and YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And for the past couple of days, he's been trending on social media based off of a clip from one of his videos. And he's having a conversation with Saul Penduka, and they start to speak about men who have dated or have sex with transsexual women.
Okay.
And they refer to these women as she-males or men with dicks, and it's been deemed transphobic. And now companies that have been aligned with MacG have dropped them, for example.
Yeah.
But I say it's never enough, because now they're going after Old Mutual, for example, who used to be aligned with him, and saying, actually, you need to hire us then as people who will represent you and not him. It's like, never enough. Where do we draw the line?
Well, this is what we've been speaking about for the last 3 years, is this idea of cancel culture. And it just seems to be getting more and more destructive. And I'm very, very sad to say that one of the things about this cancel culture that we're losing is a sense of humor. Because everybody's such a serious social justice warrior these days that we've forgotten how to laugh at ourselves and each other. And if there's one thing I find completely distasteful about another human being, I'm willing to deal with pretty much anything. But the one thing I absolutely despise, and I think Damon, you and Sia and I will probably agree on this, is a humorlessness. There's nothing worse. And you know, Damon, we've worked with people before who've been completely humorless. They just aren't able to laugh at anything. They never even crack a smile. Those are the worst people among us. And they're usually also the social justice warriors. Everything's offensive.
So I'm becoming one of those.
You are. You're becoming, I don't know what this.
I'm going to have to take a good look at myself.
Yeah. I mean, just like laugh at some more stuff. And if you find an ad offensive, maybe it's because it hurts you. And maybe that's not everyone else's problem. And maybe it's just an ad. Maybe they're actually just trying to say something about the product instead of something about you. And maybe you should take yourself out of everything and stop thinking it's all about you.
No, it definitely wasn't about me at all. Definitely not. Even though I do have a small penis.
There we go.
Damon, can we stop talking about your penis? Thank you.
Well, let's talk about something that's also measurable, which every time we get to speaking to Sean again, I'm always pleased because there's so much to talk about. There hasn't been a single week, Sean, that we've spoken to you where there hasn't been some really big news going on in the world of cryptocurrencies, the world of gold, and the stuff that you guys at Revix are really expert on. And I get lots of emails from people every single week about how useful this is. Now, I know you just walked into a conversation and I could just see you going, oh my God, what is this that they're talking about? But let's start afresh this morning because we got a lot to get through. And we're going to get a little update from Sean on cryptocurrencies. Sean Saunders is the co-founder of Revix. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the alternate investments and adding gold and crypto to your portfolio this morning. But first, give us an idea of what's been happening in the last week since we spoke to you last time.
Cool. Good morning, Gareth. Good morning, team.
Morning.
So I can actually say for the first time on the show in a long time that the crypto market's pulled back a bit, which is kind of good in many respects because it's just been week after week after week of gains. It's pulled back about 5%. Bitcoin is hovering at around $32,000 today. You actually saw Ethereum this last week, shortly after our last conversation, hit a new all-time high, $1,450.
Right.
Gold has sort of been bouncing around. It's sort of at the same level as it was this time last week, and that's about $1,860 an ounce. So it's been a rather, I'm going to say dull week, but there's never a dull week in crypto.
No.
A dull week in crypto means that the prices haven't been shooting up 20%, and you know there hasn't been this new, I don't know, pension fund or whatever making an investment. But having said that, some news that has reportedly come out, and this is something that actually came out last night, is that Harvard, Yale, Brown, and the University of Michigan, you know, these universities have rather big endowment funds, and rather big being, you know, between $40 to $50 billion assets under management. Yeah. So they've got approval to purchase cryptocurrencies as an alternative asset, which is a huge step forward. I mean, if you went back 2 or 3 years and you and I had to say to somebody, listen, there's going to be corporations, never mind endowments, but corporations purchasing cryptocurrencies, I would have been laughed out the door. And here you are today with endowments purchasing digital currencies.
Well, these institutional investors are very powerful, right? I mean, they control enormous amounts of money, as you've just indicated, when it comes to the universities and their endowments. But we've also seen over the period of the last maybe year and maybe just more than a year, major financial institutions start to take stakes in crypto, which is a big deal because that means that they're legitimizing it in a way that when it's just, you know, ordinary individuals and people who are, you know, trendy and know what's going on in the world, and maybe are at the leading edge, you know, those what do they call them? The early adopters. Those people don't necessarily carry the weight that these big institutions do. So all this is doing is making crypto very mainstream.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, this last week, funny enough, you saw the number of Bitcoin wallets with over 1,000 Bitcoin in them hit an all-time high. So 1,000 Bitcoin is roughly $32 million. So if you think about it, how many retail investors, how many Joe Soaps like you and I does it take to get to $32 million? Quite a few. But that's just one institutional investor.
Sure.
So, you know, when you start hearing this big money entering the space, and it is smart money as well. Remember that there is teams of analysts that are looking at crypto and having to say, well, you know, we are putting, if it's a pension fund, we're putting people's pensions on the line to be able to invest in this asset class. So, and, you know, I guess it's still a fringe asset class. Crypto is still a fringe asset class. We've been investing in gold forever. But it is just remarkable to sort of see this money move into the space. And that's exactly why the prices have shot up the way that they have.
So before I get into one or two of my questions, here's Hamish. He wants to know about Ripple and what you think is going on with Ripple at the moment, XRP.
So just so everyone understands sort of the background here, XRP is the cryptocurrency of Ripple Labs, and Ripple is being investigated at the moment by the SEC, which is the regulator in the US, for an unregulated securities offer. And it's a very divisive sort of area. I honestly cannot tell you whether or not the SEC is going to deem XRP to be a security or whether they'll deem it to be a cryptocurrency. If you look at Singapore, if you look at the United Kingdom, and if you look at a few other regions, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, these regions have deemed XRP to be a cryptocurrency and not a security.
Okay.
So it would seem kind of weird, I guess, if the SEC was to label this as a security. You would have a security in one region and you would have a cryptocurrency in another. The other thing to remember is that XRP is very much like oil for the Ripple network. Okay. You sort of use XRP to be able to send value between different companies or different banks in particular. Now, if you had a look at, let's say, ExxonMobil or Shell, one of the bigger oil companies out there, I mean, if they were extracting oil out of the ground and selling it, you would never deem that to be a security.
Mm-hmm.
So my personal opinion is that I think this will blow over. Ripple will get a little slap on the wrist. They'll have to probably change the way that they distribute XRP. But over the long term, you're more likely than not going to see XRP probably move up, not necessarily move up in price, but certainly be readopted on the exchanges because it was removed from a lot of exchanges.
Don't say that our listeners aren't on the ball. I mean, Hamish asking about something very specific there, and obviously Sean had the answer right up his sleeve. We didn't warn him in advance about that. He knows what's going on. So let's just talk quickly about adding gold and crypto to your investment portfolio, much like these big institutions we were talking about before. Why is it a good idea to just cover some of those in your portfolio? Why not have just a little bit? Some people will say, well, isn't it just much more safe and mainstream to just do what I've always done and invest in the stock market, for example?
Yeah, so a bit of background on myself here. So I worked at a specialty investment group in Johannesburg for a while. I then worked for a family office based in the UK. Now, a family office really gets set up when somebody has a lot of money and they need to be able to manage that money.
Mm-hmm.
And through that family office network, I was able to work with a bunch of really wealthy and really smart individuals. And what you'll see with wealthy investors, generally speaking, is that they'll invest in a diversified sort of portfolio. They're not going to invest in just stocks or just bonds or just property. They're going to diversify into really weird and wonderful things. So, you know, they're buying not only real estate, but art. They're getting into crypto. They're one of the first, you know, institutional adopters, really, of crypto. So they were the first big money entering the space. And you can look at some other interesting things like fine wines that they're investing in, private debt. So at the end of the day, you know, there is a private debt market, which is huge. And these players are, you know, pretty big players in that space. So diversification and being able to buy different assets that sort of respond to different factors is a really important investment strategy. And I don't think this is something that's appreciated enough by everyday investors. So our approach at Revix is to say to everyday people, you know, you should be investing like a millionaire would. And that means you can invest in real estate. There's a whole bunch of real estate funds on the JSE, they're called REITs, that you could look to invest in. You can invest in stocks. You can invest in bonds. You can invest in crypto. You can invest in gold. And on our platform, as things stand right now, you can invest in a diversified cryptocurrency portfolio, and you can invest in gold. Now, the beauty with investing in crypto and gold is that the correlation with the stock market between both assets is next to zero. So correlation really measures just how assets move together or how they don't move together. The higher the correlation, the more assets move together. So if you had a look at, let's say, gold and the US dollar, they move in opposite directions most of the time. So that's something known as an inverse correlation. Now, that's sort of the holy grail when it comes to building a diversified portfolio, is getting assets that sort of, you know, respond in opposite directions when something occurs. So as an example, the pandemic happens, people are freaking out. I mean, everything seems to sell off. But then if you look at the rebound in the likes of Bitcoin, you look at the rebound in the likes of gold relative to stocks, I mean, that's quite an interesting approach when it comes to portfolio management.
So in some ways, it's almost hedging your bets. And I know I'm using really rudimentary terminology here, but it is kind of hedging your bets, because if one goes up, the other one might go down, and vice versa. And it's useful to have some leverage on either side of that equation, so that you can figure out, based on what happens in world events and what happens with trade and what happens with the global economy, where your money is best placed.
Yeah, and I think this is the time where you actually, I mean, I've said this on your show before, but you need to just say, like, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I can tell you no one knows what's going to happen in the future. Have the wisdom and the humility to say, I don't know, and therefore I'm going to diversify. And I'm going to buy different assets. And who knows, I may have a view where I'm going, crypto is definitely not going to become something that's really big.
And Sean, and you don't have to put your life savings into one investment. As you said, put it into a number of different ones, but also have your toe in the pool of cryptocurrency. Have a little bit of gold. These are the things that will make your portfolio a little more diverse and interesting.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, just, you know, a bit of a sales pitch here, but, you know, with Revix, you can invest in Bitcoin, you can invest in soon Ethereum. We'll be launching as a standalone product. We've obviously got the different crypto bundles. So you can invest in our top 10 bundle. That's the top 10 cryptocurrencies equally weighted. They get automatically updated every month. I think it's an important factor to consider, which is when you invest in a particular asset class, you don't want to go buy one property, because then you're exposed to the ups and downs of that single property. You wouldn't want to buy one stock, because again, you're exposed to the ups and downs of one stock. So going out and just buying Bitcoin in the crypto space is exactly the same as just going out and buying Woolworths. You don't know what's going to happen.
By the way,
own a diversified portfolio. You're going to do that without buttons.
I mean, you teased us with some of the products that you'll be bringing onto Revix soon, but Ralph asks an interesting question. When will cannabis and gaming investment open up? I mean, you talked about renewable energies. You talked about all kinds of other exciting investments. And really, you also mentioned art earlier. I know that there are people who are now offering fractional investment in art, which is really interesting, because it means that technically you can own a thousandth of a share in a Picasso, for example. And for many people, that would be a cool thing to own, right?
Well, this is sort of where Revix wants to be in about a year's time, right? We want to be able to offer fractionalized investment into artworks. And I'm talking big artworks, looking at, you know, Banksy art pieces and all the rest.
Right.
Take that one step further. You can invest in, and this is going to blow a few people's minds, but you can actually trade Instagram accounts. You can, you know, trade URLs. There's an entire market of alternative investments. Do you understand how sneakers have grown as an investment category? If you go look at StockX, that's an online sort of portal where you can buy and sell sneakers. I mean, you get sneakers online now that trade at $5,000 to $15,000. So you see quite remarkable returns. Classic watches, collector's watches naturally are another area. And then the other thing, which is quite weird and wonderful, is digital artworks. So these are not physical artworks, but digital artworks that are created. And they are unique in the sense that they're on a blockchain and they verify yours and all the rest. But just super interesting. There's a lot of micro investment opening up at the moment.
That's amazing.
Sean, are you interested in people investing in Oprah memorabilia?
Oprah member.
No.
I don't know personally anyone that may be interested. Garrett seems really interested.
No, not. Sia is the only one who'd be interested in Oprah memorabilia. No, Sia.
And I'm the president of the Oprah fan club, so at least I have a database of 8,307 people.
You know, Sean, you know how we talk about the those great investments that people wish that they'd been part of at the right time? You know, for example, if you'd bought Bitcoin and sold it like at the end of January this year, you would have been very happy with it. But Sia once went onto eBay and found a chair, one of the audience chairs from the Oprah Winfrey show. And he wanted to buy it. He wanted to buy it, but he didn't. And it, for Sia, that's the one that got away.
Whew. That pains me.
Can I ask something, by the way? That's, I think, hopefully a little, it's a little different. But it is my dream at the end of the day. This is what I'd like to accomplish in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to enable people to take direct equity stakes in other people. So if you think about it, and I guess you do go into a bit of a gray area when it comes to the ethical side of this, but being able to acquire, as a successful businessman, as an example, if you acquire 5 or 10% in a student and you get, let's say, entitlement to this person's future income or in perpetuity or 15 or 30 or 50 years, whatever the story may be, you can put that person through his education or her education. You can put that person into rather interesting places. And yes, again, you've got to manage the ethical side of this, but it is quite remarkable how you could accelerate somebody's growth by doing that. I mean, currently the banks do this through debt, but it'll be really interesting if you could actually directly take an equity stake in somebody else.
Whoa.
You know, I love that. I love the idea that you could actually buy into a person. Imagine if you'd bought into Elon Musk.
100%.
That
Elon Musk, Michael Jordan, all the people that blow up.
Absolutely.
I mean, Jeff Bezos goes through the list, right? I mean, those shares would be trading more than Amazon probably.
And then we would finally be able to say, I'm terribly sorry, but Sia is more valuable than me.
Oh, and then it would make breakups so weird and awkward. We can't leave.
We would finally have a stock exchange of people's values, and we'd be able to say, you know what, that person is actually more valuable than the other person. I love it.
The ethical side of this is really interesting, though, because what happens, as an example, you invest in somebody that then goes off and has a baby, and then it's out of action, it's not earning income for a while.
Right.
So that's where things get really weird, right? I mean, you have to sort of manage this properly. So, again, something for 20, 30 or so.
Ah. All right, very good. So Sean will be back to tell us more because we always have limited time with him, but there's plenty to discuss. Sean Saunders and Revix. Go to Revix and find out how you can invest in gold or crypto or any of the other assets that they make available. There are portfolios there that are weighted and balanced every single week, and they can check you in on stuff like the payment platforms, many other different assets that are available, and you can go and put some money in and see what happens to it. It's a good idea. And also remember, everybody gets excited when the market is up in crypto, but it's when it's down that you need to buy. Thanks, Sean.
Cheers, guys. Thanks so much. Have
good
a great
to
day.
See you. All right. Awesome. Sean Saunders. Go to Revix.com for more information. You can also find them on all the social media handle at Revix Invest. R-E-V-I-X. All right.
Damon, would you want to invest in a person?
Sure. I was thinking it's going to be so many legal complications. It'll just be very, very complicated. So say you invested in Elon Musk, you know, he might hide some of his money. No, I'm not as successful as you think I am.
I've got to tell you.
Very, very complicated.
Listen, I've got to tell you a story quickly. So my mother, this is amazing. You know, you sometimes think you know people. So my mother sends me a video last night. She sent it to the whole family. She says, you know, my mom is really not interested in name dropping. It's nothing, something she would never, ever do. And she says she was watching this clip that someone sent her of Elon Musk's mother, May Musk. Oh. Okay, May Musk is she's the world's May Musk. She's the world's oldest supermodel, and she's lovely. So here she is. All right, let me show you.
May Musk.
Yeah, and she sounds. Listen to how South African she sounds, by the way. Just listen to this quickly.
Yeah, my children don't have fear. Yeah, in the beginning when the rockets were exploding, I would just want to curl up and cry in a corner, whereas Elon would come out and say, "Now we find out what went wrong, and we will do the next one right.
She sounds so South African. Anyway, so my mother sends this video and she says, guys, I didn't know that she was Elon Musk's mother, but my parents knew her parents, and I remember going... Yeah, listen to this. I remember going to them and them coming to us and my sister and I playing with her and her sisters.
Huh.
My mother...
What are the chances?
My mother
knew... She knew May Musk.
She knew Elon's mom. And May Musk. So my grandparents and Elon Musk's grandparents were friends. That's pretty fucking incredible, right?
I mean, you need to work.
What does that entitle you to now?
No, nothing. I mean, it's just interesting. But, you know, this is my mom. And she just didn't realize that this woman, who she had known when she was a kid, is now the mother to the richest man on earth, or the second richest man on earth. But isn't that incredible?
Well, it keeps on changing.
I mean, I think that's pretty awesome. And she only recognized her from the way that she sounds and the way that she looks now. And there were some pictures in this clip of Elon Musk's grandparents, and that's also how she knew that they'd all kind of spent time together when they were kids, and clearly our grandparents were all friends. So, I mean, that could
be incredible.
It is incredible. It's like shows you how small the world is.
Mm. Damon, I feel like you're a little fixated by her name,
May Musk,
because it sounds so funny. Why? It's so funny, May Musk.
Do you know what her kids' names are? So there's Elon, and then there's Kimball, who's the other brother.
Kimball Musk.
Kimball, and then there's the daughter, Tosca.
Tosca Musk.
Tosca Musk.
You know. You see, this is why I think, like, naming a child is so important. You're sort of setting them up for they already have unique names. They're never going to be conventional. The name will always stand out. So
can you imagine Elon having to, his whole life, has had to correct people the way they say his name? Is it Elon? Is it Elon? I'm sure of it. Really.
And then I just can't imagine like an Errol Musk. You see, that's just like an Errol. An Errol just, nah. But Elon, there's a...
Yeah, it's different.
Something grand about that.
Well, I mean, listen.
As long as you don't call your child Stinky Musk or Bad Musk.
Stinky Musk.
That wouldn't have worked.
Okay, lots and lots of comments coming through on our discussion beforehand about toxic masculinity. Andre, funnily enough, says the name Musk reeks of toxic masculinity.
Exactly.
Clever, Andre. And if you haven't seen Elon's mom, she really is a beautiful woman. She's got the silver hair, and she in this clip that I saw, she's really dressed immaculately. She's quite an incredible woman, and she must be in her 70s now, 60s, 70s.
Does she live in South Africa? Does she still live here?
She lives in the US.
No, she's in the States, and she's done a lot of, you know, Gareth, you said it, she's a model, and she's done a lot of big campaigns, as in still, you know, will do an ad for some cream or something. No, she's in a group of people where they have gray hair and it suits them.
Yeah.
They really look good. Yeah.
She's been a model for 50 years. That has got to be a record of some kind, right?
Yeah, but like a top model all these years?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even if you were doing cats to blogs.
Imagine
Christmas,
how cool it is.
Counts.
Imagine, I mean, she's a success in her own right. And she obviously was... you know, she's clearly, and in this clip she talks about how they didn't have a lot of money, and she didn't have any furniture in the house that they lived in, but she never really felt hard done by. She said, because her brothers and sisters found out later when she wrote a book that she didn't have a lot of money. And they said to her, why didn't you ask us for money? And she said, well, I would have just asked you for money to what? To go to the movies or to buy a fancy dinner? She said, we didn't need that. I wasn't going to ask you for things that were luxuries for me. And here she is now. She's, you know, the mom to probably the most famous entrepreneur in the world. That's really interesting. And she says that Elon, when he was a kid, he tried this experiment for a month where he tried to live on $1 a day. And he managed to. And she says that gave him the courage to know that, okay, if everything fails, if everything goes out of the window, if all of my projects are a disaster, I can still live on $1 a day. And I've got enough to do that for a couple of years. That's quite cool.
Yeah, but he wasn't. Yeah, no, but he also he wasn't paying rent, etc. But okay, get the point.
Well, I mean, look, can you live on a dollar a day? I doubt very much you could. I couldn't. I don't know that.
No, definitely not.
Have the discipline to do that. I just thought it was interesting. It's a really cool little interview. I don't know where it comes from, but if I can find the link, I'll post it on cliffcentral.com and you can watch it yourself.
Well, it also quite that point of Mae Musk not asking her siblings for money. It kind of saves her behind now when your son is the richest man in the world. Now they, you can't have family calling her. So
now they can't ask her for money.
It's like, no, well, I never asked you for money. Imagine the number of people Elon Musk must have calling for money. Actually.
Oh, my God.
Your neighbor, your grandmother.
Well, you know, very rich people sometimes have a person who just deals with those kinds of things because people do request money. And then, you know, if you're really, really wealthy, you have to have almost an office, a person in an office who just deals with requests because some of them come from charities and, you know, some very valuable and worthy causes. And maybe you do want to give them some money. And then there are those people who are just chancing it because they see a way to get some cash. But it's interesting. We were talking about this just yesterday with Bulelo and saying that, you know, it's interesting that people like Jacob Zuma, it doesn't matter how much they have coming in, they find a way to waste it and spend it and end up with zero, no matter how much comes in. And it just shows you that the amount of money you have doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to hold on to any of it. Even if it's a huge amount of money. I mean, we were talking about the Cell C guy earlier this morning who defrauded Cell C and their service providers of 130 million rand. And somehow, for most of that 7 years that he was doing this, he managed to hide it. And Damon and Sia and I were both going, how do you hide 130 million rand? I mean, it's really incredible how some people... You know, enough is never enough.
That's a skill in and of itself.
Is it just me? It must just be me. I'm still thinking about penis size. And I'm just, you know.
Must be just you.
It must just, because we were talking about it for a long time.
Yeah.
And maybe Sia, you got more experience. And I just, the other day a couple of months ago, I was in the kitchen. And a friend of ours was sitting on the kitchen chair, and I was wearing my boxer shorts, you know, because in the evening I was in my pajamas. And I was, you know, I'm a bit clumsy. And I went around her and I hooked my boxer shorts, got hooked on the chair.
Yeah.
And I kind of like exposed myself a little bit by mistake. And they all joked.
Was
they
this
all
in,
laughed
was this
at
in,
my penis
was this in,
slapped her in the
hang
face.
Hang on, was this in public?
In the kitchen.
Oh.
Bernice was there and this friend of ours.
Oh, okay.
A woman.
Okay.
And they both joked that my penis slapped her in the face. But I know that's impossible. Because my penis is like, it's a small, it doesn't flap around. Now, what I found interesting is you get some men, when they are flaccid, they've got this long penis. But then when it's erect, does it go bigger? Or is that flaccid part just gets harder? And then you get some men, like in my case, it looks very small, but then when it's erect, it's not bad. It's 14 centimeters. 14 centimeters is not
so
bad.
So, Damon.
And the girth is all right. So, what I'm trying to say is if you ever do meet a man, if you ever are in a situation where you meet a man and you see this small little thing, give him a chance. See what it looks like when it's erect. Because when it's erect, that's only right. When you can really,
Judge. Two things. We've only got like a minute and a half left of the show. And really, I'm going to give the floor to Sia on this because I suspect, just based on his reaction here, that he has something to say. Go for it, Sia.
I got a small little thing, but when it's erect,
Let's Sia talk.
I don't know what I need to say right now because there's just a lot of visuals that I'm getting. And
can you concur?
Damon, I'm at a loss for words. Look, there are different types of men. Some men are naturally endowed and then they might not really grow as much when erect. And then others, it's vice versa. So I just don't know why you're so preoccupied with your penis size at this stage of your life?
No, because we were, what are you talking about? We were, it's all I could think about for the last hour, because that's what we were talking about. So, see, it's would you agree that the guy's got a small looking penis when it's flaccid? There's still potential, it can still be a decent size.
Yeah, but sometimes, like, for me in the dating game, you aren't interested in giving people chances.
There's also that argument.
Toxic masculinity, there you go.
Yeah, well, you know, some people would say just speaking about penises is toxic masculinity in some way. It's like an aggression. But there are...
Tune in tomorrow, we'll be talking about vagina sizes. Yeah,
no, for sure. But here's the deal.
That's a topic as well, about the labia majora, the labia minora.
There are people who they go with that grower or shower theory. Like if either you have a tiny penis when it is not erect, and then it's very large when it's erect, or you have a substantial flaccid penis and it doesn't grow very much when it is erect. And that's the grower versus shower theory, more or less.
But you get some guys that when it's flaccid, it's very big. And then when it's erect, it goes even bigger. Does that happen?
I'm sure you do, Damon. I'm sure you do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
All right. Oh, yes. What an exciting way. What an exciting way to end a show that's really gone everywhere, from talking about former presidents and extortion and fraud and corruption, right through to toxic masculinity, to cryptocurrency, and now finally penis size. It's all very exciting. What a day. What a day.
Goodness.
Very
my,
good.
My.
Delivering the value this morning, Damon Calvari, C.S. Angweni, and you. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Have a good day. CliffCentral.com.